Welcome to the fourth episode of For the Love of Improv. I'm Jesse Wicks.
Hi, I'm Katie Welsh.
And today we are talking about improv as an art form.
So we have Lisa Woods on today. Lisa's a good friend of ours, and we've had the pleasure of doing improv with her, performing, practicing, studying. So we're super excited to have her on. Lisa Woods has performed and studied improv for 5 years. She currently performs the living room format, which we might talk a little bit about later, regularly at Reno Improv with her improv group, Sensitive People. I happen to also be a member of that improv group. Lisa is one of the founders of a clown group that has started hosting Clown Ground. I'm also a member of that. We haven't actually come up with a name, so that's why it's generic clown group. But we have started a Clown Ground, which is kind of the clown version of a playground, which we might talk about later as well. And we're just about to premiere our first performance, I believe next Saturday. So we're super excited about that. So yeah, welcome Lisa to For the Love of Improv. Yay.
Hey, thank you. And again, world premiere of our unnamed clown group. World premiere.
Yeah.
Sitting for 10 years, right?
That's right.
Yeah. You should just call it the generic clown group.
Yeah.
Or what did you say? The
Generic clown group.
What I said.
Yeah.
Generic clown group.
The generic clown group.
But yeah, so Lisa, as just said earlier, I thought she would be a great person to have on this podcast because she is a Jill of all trades. And what I love about Lisa is she's not only an amazing improviser, but she studies. She's a bookworm with it. She gets the book, like she'll take a stand-up class and she'll get a book, you know, with Clown. And we'll get into the book she's read. I really want to hear more. I really haven't had that conversation with you, Lisa, about the books, all these books that you've read and gotten into. And she's taken workshops and she's gone to improv festivals and, you know, she's tried sketch, she's tried stand-up, she's tried, musical improv, right? We just did that workshop the other weekend. So I'm super excited, to talk with Lisa about all things improv. Let's do it.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we say at For the Love of Improv a lot is that, hey, we're not experts. We're studying here and we're learning too. But the truth is, like, once you study enough, you get to a level that, like, you might not be an expert in any one thing, but you do have a really good rounded out idea of what it takes to do improv. And Lisa's one of those people that's super fun to watch because does have that rounded feel, and she's fun to play with too. So I think
I can tell too that she's being very humble right now. She's like, oh my God, all this praise.
No, I mean, seriously, because I still very much in my mind think of myself as a beginner. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking as I was thinking about this coming up this evening was, first of all, how humbled I am anytime I go somewhere else, because we have a lot of comfort level in Reno Improv. It's a, you know, a small little cozy area. And now I'm comfortable on that stage and in front of strangers in that theater. But anytime I've gone somewhere else, when I've gone to Improv Utopia, I have been so very humbled.
But that's what I love about you, Lisa, too. It's like you, because I know you've told me, you know, you'll say, oh, I'm really nervous tonight, or, you know, or, oh God, you know, I can't believe I'm doing this. But you still do it. Like, you still get out there. And I mean, we all have nerves and everything, but I know, I just love that you're still going to the festivals, even though there's like a level of discomfort probably that comes with it too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My former group, this was the first group I was in right after, finishing classes at Reno Improv, that group We Digress went to the San Francisco Improv Festival, and it had a couple of, really experienced improvisers in that group. Tim Mahoney, Taylor, both of whom you've interviewed. Taylor went to school for theater and Tim's been improvising for 8 years at that time. And I was very new. And we, I think we got in because we happened to have one good tape that we sent off to them. And also Tim knew people there. So we got in, and we were like the opening act on the first night.
My God.
But it was just so fun to go. And you see such a variety of acts that we don't get a chance to see in Reno. It's so important to go out and see what's there. I was remembering, let's see, I saw Marcus Sams and Joe Liss. They do collaborations. They go under Sams and Liss, and they are hilarious to watch on stage. They're very physical, very clowny. Now that I have watched Clown, very physical.
Oh, cool.
And it's just the two of them moving all around the stage. Jet Evelith and Scott Adsett, I've seen them twice. Jet actually taught Chad Damiani Clown, and she's also a great improviser. And Scott, we might know from 30 Rock, and she's known for her object work. She just does amazing on-scene sketches silently, like the one I saw. She somehow she was wearing this enormous gown with flowing robes, and she's, you know, moving them around throughout. And somehow I remember that they had sex, and there was this elongated scene with the robes. Just the object work was funny.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
I love that. And see, this is the very thing that this is why we wanted you to have you on, Lisa, because it's like, you are such a great observer of those small little aspects of improv, like object work, where it's like, and then you, like you said, it's like, it gives you such an appreciation for that part and what can be done with it, you know? But I feel like we got ahead of ourselves a little bit. We jumped the gun because, nope, it wasn't you, it was us. Because we like to start out and with a question that we like to ask all our guests, because we feel like it's like everybody's origin story of how they started improv. Like, you know, cause I think it's like everybody has a special story, you know, and it's like most people who get really into it, it was like a life-changing moment. And so
mm-hmm. It was a birthing moment.
Yeah, exactly. And so can you tell us a little bit about how you got into improv in the first place and what happened, you know,
there on?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try not to make this too long, but like I raised my daughter by myself. And then when she went off, I was trying to figure out, okay, what's my life now? And I started that first year with doing a lot of volunteer work with the things I like Reno Little Theater, Reno Philharmonic, Reno Chamber Music, Reno Jazz, you know, all this theater music stuff. And it just really felt empty because you're not participating in it. And then I had a visit with my ex-husband's nephew. Now, my ex-husband was Chinese, and I met this young man when he was about 15, and I met him in China, and he was told to say hello to me. And he was like, all he could do to say hello to me. He was very shy, very studious. And I met him over here. He'd been to Harvard or somewhere and was now married. And we were talking, and he was talking about how much he loved improv that he took at whatever school he was at. And I was like, really? You know, it's your second language, you're just get here. And he was talking about how fun it was. And it just really kind of lit something in me. So anyway, New Year's came, I saw a meetup for Reno Improv. And I thought, well, I'm telling no one that I'm doing this. And I hope to God no one sees me doing this. But I went and I did the playground. And one of the first things they always say is, don't try to be funny. I was like, done, you know.
And, no problems there.
Yeah, done. And everyone was welcoming. It was fun. The games were fun. We laughed. And
I think that there's something different about improv in that way. Like if you're going to a theater or you're doing jazz or you're doing any kind of other performance art, there is this element of right and wrong, right? But yes, like in improv, you're literally just going and playing, and maybe a little bit in clowning too, and some of those like side stuff, but like you can't really be wrong. And like, it really is, if you mess up, you can celebrate. And I think that's something that's missing in theater and other music things. It's like, if you mess up, you messed up.
Right.
And then you're in your head, and it's okay to be in your head because you're just spouting off pre-made lines. But when, you know, I just feel like improv makes you get out of your head. And that's what makes it so fun and exciting, is like, oh boy, I'm not supposed to be in my head. So right, I have permission not to think so hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you catch something, if you catch a mistake and play with it, it's part of the joy.
Right.
I know you always talk about Rosowski, and I took a workshop from him in Sacramento a few years ago. And one of the things he did was he led us outside. And he's very into meditation and awareness. And he was asking us to name all the things we could hear. Okay, traffic noise, blah, 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 birds chirping. And then he pointed out that we were like standing next to an air conditioner unit that was very noisy, and none of us mentioned that. And I was thinking about how we're kind of socially cued not to notice things. Like if we're doing past the sound in the playground and someone coughs, they have tuned that out, right? And we as leaders of playground are like, no, you pay attention to everything that was just brought to you. Whatever you've been trained to not hear, you want to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everything can be made into something or as a part of the scene or whatever interaction that you're doing. And then that can be funny in itself, is that you're incorporating this thing that we take for granted as a background noise, and suddenly you're drawing attention to something, and then it's like, oh, ha ha ha. Like, I don't know. It's just,
yeah. Right. The thing, it's all about, like, comedy is all about expectation, right? So if society in general is kind of trained to tune something out, and then you bring attention to it, that's that surprise factor that makes people laugh.
And everyone's like, oh yeah, I did notice that. I did notice that, but I forgot I noticed it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that has that effect too, where it's like, oh, probably everybody else in the audience did that, noticed it too. And then it's kind of got that bonding thing too, where it's like, oh yeah, we're all in this together.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So yeah.
Cool.
Exactly. So, so that's how you got into it. Why did you stick around?
I just had fun and I came back for a few more times. And then they said they were starting a class, and I asked whether I could join. Because it tends to be the same people there. So I was starting to feel comfortable with them. I remember, I won't go into old home week for Reno Improv, but you know, the old standards that are just so fun to play with here.
Right. Well, I think we were really blessed in Reno. I'm no longer there, but to have some really good players there and some players who really take their craft seriously. Mm-hmm. There is that feeling of safety, like there's nobody judging you, but they do at the same time, they elevate you, you know, that they're able to help you become a better performer there. Just some really, really strong players, make you fall in love with the art. I mean, which is why we made this podcast, because we were in love with it.
Yeah.
Or love of improv.
I was telling Katie over the weekend, and I'll tell you now, Jess, that I listened to several of the episodes that I hadn't heard before. And I think you're just doing a wonderful job. So.
Well, thank you. And we will use that as a clip to promote. We did not pay Lisa to say that. We promised.
Unsolicited.
Totally. There's no coercion involved. Cool. So also just one more follow-up question on that, because you kind of started out the story by talking about your nephew, right? That was really shy, and you kind of have mentioned that, you know, you kind of feel humbled and sometimes nervous. And so when it came time to actually, I don't know how far along you got until you actually did a performance. How was that? And what, you know, what were you, was there some part of you like, how did I get into this? What, like, I just was looking for something fun to do after, you know, my daughter went off to college and all of a sudden I'm on the stage doing this. How is this possible?
Yes. And I was again thinking how much things change, because I remember I did the level one performance. So after 8 weeks plus a couple playgrounds, I had my first performance. But I mean, I'm quite sure that there were more performers than there were audience at that time. So that helped.
You had a slow easing into it then.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay, cool. It was probably primarily Reno improv folks watching. So that made it easy, and it gets better over time. But yes, I have to remind myself with students now, how hard I was on myself initially and how hard I would take any criticism, or how I'd always be thinking of how other people were perceiving me. You know, like, oh, she came out with a poor initiation again. You know, right. Always that was in my head, and it's really right. Taken a few years. And now it's like, oh, I don't even remember until I have a really terrible time again.
Yeah. And we should mention that, you know, Lisa is, and I probably should have mentioned this in the bio. So sorry about that, Lisa. But Lisa also teaches improv now, at Reno Improv a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Beginner.
I think you've co-taught level one and now level two. Is that right?
That, yeah. And playground. So yeah.
Correct. And yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what you're saying about that self-editing, I noticed that too. When I first started, it was all about me, and everybody was judging me, and everything I said had to get a reaction, or else I felt invalidated. And what I noticed is that was also true for my regular life. And I think a lot of people do that. They think that they don't realize they're editing themselves all the time, and they're not okay with just kind of being themselves in a certain way. And I think going through that process of level one, level two, becoming comfortable with just being wrong or having a bad scene. And then, you know, teachers like you being able to kind of make us comfortable in that, completely changed my life. I mean, I think it completely changed the way that I go about taking critiques in my own business. I'm a creative. Mm-hmm. You know, letting stuff roll off my back a little bit easier and realizing, you know, everything is editable. Everything that you say or do it's not what you say or do. It's the reaction you have and how you keep going. If everything stops you because you're thinking about it too hard, that's what people notice. And that's what the audience feels uncomfortable with. But if you say something wrong and then you turn it into something right, you never really have to worry about what people think of you, because you know, it's always kind of ongoing. I think that's a huge life lesson.
I think too,
you said that so well. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, for somebody who's such a big ham like myself, so it's all about me. And it's like, yeah, I need that validation. I need that external validation all the time. What improv has really helped me with is, you know, it's actually about giving validation to others, and then you get that reciprocation. So that's what's been really eye-opening for me, is actually learning how to be more of a supportive person on stage, and then creating an art together, and instead of being like, not that I don't grab it when I can, because that's why I joined clowning. But, you know, I mean, you know, instead of like, oh, when's the spotlight going to be on me? Or, you know, looking for those moments where I get the laugh. It's also like, you know, because that can be rewarding to get a laugh, obviously. But like, to me, that other feeling where you're like, you support your partner and then they support you back. And then you create this beautiful thing and you're in sync together. And then that's like one of the best feelings. I don't know about you guys, but that's one of the best feelings I know I get from doing improv.
I think that's a part of the art form too. Like, yeah. Like that's what's different about improv is like the support of your scene partner, is a craft in itself. And it is something that's unique from each individual because each individual has something unique to give.
And I told Katie after after my Christmas holidays, I went to a family reunion and it was great. I love my family. But one thing I noticed was that if I'm sitting around with my improv group or improv friends and we do, you know, something like that, like everyone will do, you know, just a stupid little thing. And it's so fun. It's so fun. And I would do something stupid and they'd all kind of be like, I wonder what that's about, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Too much coffee. I don't know.
Right.
I know. And it's funny too, because like, you know, my husband, who's a total introvert and, you know, sometimes he's like, yeah, I mean, you know, he's very, you know, mellow dude or whatever, but, he's like, yeah, sometimes it's interesting hanging out with your improv friends because there are times when I just don't know what to do because we're all like, hey, like we're doing a scene and we're like, hey, like, or we're just doing something like silly or stupid. And then we're yes ending each other. And we're like, like, you know, and he's just like, what am I supposed to be participating?
I mean, how do I fit in? Right.
What to do? These are crazy people. And I'm like, yeah, sorry. That's just, yep. That's how it goes.
Right. Well, we've turned off that mechanism, kind of like Lisa was saying in the beginning, we've turned off that mechanism of being like, oh, am I supposed to be doing something? It's like, you're not really supposed to be doing anything except enjoying yourself and listening. And if you're listening, something naturally comes out. You end up naturally participating if you're actually listening.
Yeah. Right. That's the other thing. It's so meditative. You know, you're not trying to think ahead of time. Again, I go back to when I first started and I'd be in those two line scenes, you know, practice drills. And I'd be like, okay, four more people to go. What am I going to say? What am I going to say? And, oh, it's going to disappoint. Oh, they did so well, you know? Now you go out there and
you're not even thinking about it till you jump on stage.
Yeah. I mean, should think about it a little more, but not too much.
Well, so let's get into some of your studies. So you've been to a few, I know you've been to quite a few workshops, but you've also been to a couple of festivals, which is not something that I've done some workshops, but I've never experienced going to an improv festival. So I'd love to hear about some of your experiences. What was some of the most memorable things? Do you recommend to people going to these, which ones, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I've only gone to two festivals and they were both great. One was just down the road in Sacramento, their inaugural FemFest, which was just all sorts of female comedy. And it was terrifying. It was just a sort of an ad hoc women's team that we threw together. I don't believe you were on that, were you, Katie?
No, I think you guys invited me, but something was happening. I don't remember. Yeah, I couldn't do it. Yeah, I was bummed though, because it sounded fun.
It was. And it's always so fun to see what the bigger cities have, what people are doing. I think maybe at that time they'd started to talk about doing sketch and there was a really good sketch group there. And there was also this trio called Femity who does humorous trio. Anyway, that was my first experience and it was my first experience on a foreign stage as it were. And that was terrifying.
Really?
Kind of re-brought back all those strange feelings of, I think it's important probably to, or interesting, at least interesting to go improvise other places and with new people and kind of go, whole different vibe, whole different lights and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Bigger audience maybe, or wow. Okay.
Right. And then
that sounds a little scary. I'm not going to lie, but
yeah.
Sounds fun.
And then San Francisco Improv Festival, I think the best part of that was the different classes that we got to take. They were offering them to everyone, but performers got first dibs. And that's where I met Chad Damiani and learned clown, which cool. I was like, oh, this sounds really dumb, but okay, let's see what it is. And I love it, as you guys know. And I also did a 2-hour improvised Shakespeare.
Wow.
Workshop, which I would love to try that sometime.
Wow. That sounds challenging. Well, maybe it's different from what the title, you know, just on first impression, but that sounds.
For the most part, genre doesn't appeal to me, like the idea of, you know, vampires as cowboys or I don't know. But what they were telling us, the two takeaways that I recall are first, you to be Shakespearean, you would sort of analogize your emotions to something in nature, like, you know, my love for you is like the spring growing ever green. And now, you know, it's fall, winter.
Right.
And so you would just sort of wax on, they would say, wax on, just keep up, keep going on and on and on. When you think of it that way, it seems quite doable.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Did you ever study like Shakespeare, just like regular Shakespeare in college or anywhere else?
I read a couple of plays in college and in high school. And when I was a kid, we went to several Shakespeare's and I had like a, it wasn't Grimm's fairy tales. There was a, like an
anthology or something.
I know like the synopses at least of lots of Shakespeare stories. So
yeah.
Cool. Shakespeare.
I took a class in college. Did you go to, was it Utopia? What is that?
Yes. I've gone twice to Improv Utopia, which any improviser should do. They have four different camps, West Coast, East Coast, Yosemite, and then one in Ireland.
Wow.
And I've been to West Coast, which is like a long weekend, and it's several like 4-hour classes. Mm-hmm. And you can choose which ones you want to take out of like five options. And that was great.
And which classes, what, or was there a particular class that you took that you were like, whoa?
I remember taking one from, it might have been Landon Kersley, I'm not sure, but whoever it was, if it wasn't him, apologies. It was a ground, it was a, my first thing doing characters, and they were talking about just kind of like spitting out, almost like vomit your opinions, that characters are very opinionated. They have opinions about everything. You say, do you like baby carrots? And they have strong for or against, you know, the most bland things. and this was all new to me. It was just, you know, I was listening to that. And I do remember my proud failure from that too, which they wanted us to be, they assigned us things and they told me to be an emo. Do a character as an emo, and I just could not do it. Couldn't even. Okay.
Were you like, what is, I don't even know what that is. What is that? You didn't have really a reference or what?
I think that was a large part of it. I was picturing someone who would like wear white makeup in a bikini and like
I
dark
think someone hair. With, yeah, dark, like oily hair that's always just kind of like.
Yeah.
Putting it back out of its face, the white skin. Yeah.
Yeah. In the 80s, we call them goths, but I think goth. In 2000s, started.
No.
I don't know. Anyway, so what happened with your proud failure?
Oh, well, I just, you know, really made a fool of myself in a bunch of improvisers. So, hey, check that off the list again.
Right.
Yeah, but it's really fun. It's really fun to go to those places because, again, I mean, I think we do have really good people in Reno Improv, Ben, Craig. We were very fortunate to have him. And then Aurora and some of our other teachers are fantastic. But Improv Utopia is people who are making a living teaching and doing improv. Right. And they have, how to say it down so well how to explain it to different people. Mm-hmm. And also you're playing with people from big cities and really different backgrounds. So
That's so cool.
Yeah. And then Yosemite is different. It's, you choose one class to take for the entire time. So I took something called the deconstruction, which is a format from BOC.
Can you explain what the deconstruction format is?
Briefly. It's really complicated. It starts with a grounded scene, and then everyone's paying attention to words and gestures from that, and then picking it out. Like there's a scene where maybe you caught the word judgment in it, in the scene, and you'll all kind of walk across the stage doing some sort of gesture and saying judgment, 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 you know, very quick little scenes. There are so many parts to this. I can't remember all of them, but eventually that scene you'll go back to that scene and there'll be coloring in from it. There'll be kind of an absurdist scene based on the themes that you picked up from the scene. And at the end, I believe it'll have gone forward as much as 7 years in time and sort of have pulled it all together.
Oh, wow. That sounds challenging.
And very specific. I know when you were in, you're in Sensitive People, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Sensitive People is an awesome group at Reno Improv, and they kind of have the same type of thing where at the beginning they draw from they have a scene where they just kind of sit around and talk about real things that happened in their lives. And then the whole show is always based on just that conversation they had about the real lives. And I think that there's something exciting about the audience being in on this inside joke of knowing where that idea came from. And it's something probably totally different, but they just pull out this one thing. And then it's almost, it creates this bond between you and the audience of like, oh, hey, I know the inside joke about where that's from. And that sounds like very similar to the deconstruction, but a little more open format.
I think there are some similarities. Absolutely. And I do think, I've had several people in audiences tell me that they like Sensitive People in part because they like to see us just sitting there talking about real stories. And first of all, they always say that they can tell that we really like and appreciate hearing each other's stories. And it's true. We get, we have some fantastic.
I learned something new about at least one or two people every single time we perform. I'm like, I didn't know that about you. Right. So it's cool. It's a nice little bonus.
Let's go. Should we go into one of our segments? Sure. How about we get into a little bit of our concept of the day?
Yeah, since it kind of goes along with, what we were just talking about with Sensitive People, because the concept of the day is basically, I picked three this time because this is what we do in Sensitive People. And so I figured since Lisa was in Sensitive People, it might make sense to talk about this. But basically the three concepts are grounded scenes, which Lisa kind of just mentioned when she was talking about the deconstruction. So we'll get into that. And then character-based scenes, and then absurd scenes, which she also mentioned with the deconstruction. So grounded, and I kind of grabbed here and there from the internet. So don't take these too heavily, people, as official definitions, but I think they match. So this one is from a site called Collaborative Improv, in their glossary of terms for grounded. So it says grounded refers to a degree of realism and practicality. When we play grounded scenes or characters, we are not looking to be extreme or absurd. Instead, we play and perform in a typical situation. This does not mean everything has to be happy. Instead, it means we play real, The emotions, actions, and responses are those we might actually encounter in life and not exaggerated for the sake of exaggeration. Do you guys feel like, does that sound like a, should we add or take away from that definition, or does that sound pretty much right?
Yeah. I mean, I think grounded is, in my head, it's kind of like a baseline of like, hey, this is normality in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of creating a baseline.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess I'll go through the three of them and then we can come back and discuss. So that's grounded. And then, this other definition, it wasn't really a definition. It was like a description, taken from Hoopla. And we'll put all these links, in our show notes. So character has to do with point of view, voice, background, mental state, physical behavior, status, you name it. So taking something or a couple of those things and creating a character. And really, I think point of view is a big one, you know, really, but also, you know, taking a physicality or a way that you speak. Sometimes people, if they're brave, do accents, and just making that the character. So a little bit less grounded, because now you're kind of being a, you know, a little bit more off the wall than just, sort of a more real, reactionary person as if you were just in real life. And then finally we have, absurd. And I took this definition from What is Absurd Humor? Your Guide to Surreal Comedy, from a site called Witty Companion. And it says absurd humor or surreal comedy is the type of humor that revolves around illogical situations, behaviors, and absurd characters that make you laugh simply because they are ridiculous and unexpected. So there we have it, grounded, character, and absurd. And the reason why, like I said before, I chose this is because kind of a little bit recently with sensitive people, because the way that we do a format called the living room. And basically, like you guys mentioned before, as we start off, like Jess was saying, is we start storytelling, telling true stories just about our lives, just as who we are. And then we do scenes inspired both by those stories. And then we do those in three beats. So we do three scenes, we tell stories, we do three scenes, we come back, we tell more stories, we do three scenes, we come back and tell stories, and then do three scenes. So three beats. And what we kind of decided to do as a group one day, with the help of our coach, Jason Sarna, who's been on season one, by the way, should check that out. He suggested, like, why don't we try to do the first beat as grounded scenes, the second beat as character scenes, and then the third beat absurd scene. So it kind of has this, you know, gradual build up from sort of grounded to kind of to the ridiculous. So anyways, I want to hear you guys' thoughts about what is grounded or character or absurd mean to you, or what do you guys think?
Well, when I think grounded, which is my preferred style, I always think of when my mom was dying and she had cancer that had metastasized her brain, and she was doing some very loopy things that were hilarious. Oh. And just the kind of conversations you have. And I always remember one time when we were just sitting and doing embroidery. This wouldn't play on stage, but because we were trying to think of things to do, and her brain was no longer telling her like where the canvas was. And so she was embroidering like a sock or something, and the sock was attached to the embroidery. And it sounds very plain, but it was kind of hilarious to watch this and to watch, especially to watch how intently she was trying to do it right, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
So are you saying that's kind of, that kind of went into absurd, or?
No, I mean, it was all just what she was doing, but you know, the way life is really funny. Another time I took her to like an ice cream place, and she was still able to walk and talk and so on. So people couldn't tell that she was really sick. And then as we were leaving, there was a big tip jar there and she just took it and walked off with it, which is of course not something anyone in their right mind would do. But in her mind, it was like, oh, I forgot this or.
Right.
But it was just hilarious. And their reaction to seeing this happen.
Right. So
what do we do? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that a mistake that a lot of like first level improvisers make is assuming that funny has to be absurd. And there is a hilarity sometimes in just reality and the way that things actually play out. I remember my experience of level one, I had, I think, two actual stand-up comedians in there. And then a couple guys who fancied themselves hilarious. And there would be a lot of scenes with this absurdity in it. And I felt like I had to match that absurd energy, even though I didn't feel. So it took a lot of energy because I felt like I had to become absurd to be as hilarious as these stand-up comics were. And I feel I failed a lot in that because that's not my natural state. I'm actually a pretty grounded person. And when I started playing to my strengths, which was that grounded character, those grounded characters, it became a lot more funny. And I made their characters more funny because I gave them something to compare their absurdity to. Right, and sometimes if I was in a scene with another grounded player, that would be fine. You don't have to have that contrast because like you said, sometimes basic life can be funny if you're pulling out those small things that people don't normally notice, like we were talking about earlier.
Well, your children probably make you laugh all the time.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
The way they see things or what they say.
Right.
And that's what I love about your, and that's another example too, but your example with your mom when she was ill and she was playing her life as if that was reality. Mm-hmm. Like that was for her, that made sense to her. And she treated it as such. It wasn't something ridiculous. And I think that that's what grounded is. It could be some, like it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to not do things that are ridiculous. You could do things, but I think it means you treat them as if that were reality. And there's no just like, yeah, that's, you treat it as a matter of fact thing that's happening. And I mean, I struggle the most with, Lisa knows this, I struggle the most with grounded because I am that like I always want to go up there. And I really appreciated, especially Jason's coaching of really showing us and having us do exercises where it's like, it's really getting myself to really understand what grounded means. And I actually really enjoy grounded scenes much more now. And I think that they can be some of the most successful things, scenes, like you said, Jess, like it's not about being the ham or finding the funny. I mean, it's okay to find, like if a line comes to you that's funny, that's fine. But it's just having those real reactions. It's weird too. Like it's for me, it's like, oh, you just play yourself on stage. Like that's such a foreign concept for me because I, like a lot of actors, I think it's like safer to, it feels safer for some people to play other people that are so different from themselves because you feel less vulnerable. But, I think that some of the best performances I've had that I've surprised myself are in grounded scenes. I'm like, oh, I can do that. So
I remember in my level one, there was someone who liked to have scenes where there were, drugs or, lots of sex or something like that going on. And at that point I was like, yes. And so,
I'll have sex with you. Wait, what?
And your brother. Yeah. which is fine. But I didn't understand that you're saying yes to the reality of the scene. And you could also, not that I would be speaking as myself, but there would also be funny, in the situation where you have a roommate that is like anything goes and another roommate that's like, I have work at 6. Could you keep your groans down or whatever? I don't know.
Right. So it's not always that you have to agree with the actual words that are coming out of the other person's mouth to be, right, to be grounded. It's that you have to be, you have to agree with the point of view of your character. So that's, I mean, I think that's where character comes in. You have that grounded of, okay, this is the status quo, but you take it to the next step, which is character. And now you're talking about point of view, which if you want to know more about point of view, you can go back and listen to Courtney Ropp's podcast in season one. She talked a lot about point of view and character. And it really is about agreeing with who you are as a character and what you've already established. So it's not always yes and to the last thing they said. It's yes and to the reality that you've created in that grounded part of the scene. And then you, from there, you can heighten it. So you kind of need that grounded place to be able to heighten it. And then once you introduce character, that's kind of like the color of the scene. What do they say? Mental state, physical behavior, status. Like that's, I think character is just like, not so much, oh, reality, we agree, but like, oh, this is who I am. And agreeing with that, is, I feel that's like an elevation from grounded a little bit. And then,
yeah, I think really, from character, my understanding or my experience with it and the people that I, you know, like, again, Jason Sarna talks about it. And maybe, you know, Lisa, maybe you can talk about, cause you said, some point you talked about one of the first workshops or something you took, right, was about character.
Oh, character and just sort of vomiting out opinions and just,
yeah,
opinions about everything. Yes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, right there too, it's really about point of view, mm-hmm, and holding on. So I think just like what you're saying, it's like you're holding on to that point of view is that grounded part of it, but it also kind of leans to the absurd or starts to go there because you're like a character. So mm-hmm, you can kind of be a little more silly or goofy or a little not as real, let's say, I don't know. But as long, I mean, and your point of view can be anything like, I want cake. That could be a point of view. And right, the whole time you're in the scene, that's all you want. Your character just wants cake. And, you know, yeah, that just plays out. And the to me, what I've witnessed is the more the character holds onto their point of view, usually the funnier it is, you know, and if all the characters, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm bleeding out. Yeah. I know I need to go to the hospital, but do they have cake there?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like, right, will the cake stop? Maybe the cake will stop the bleeding. Like, I know I need cake, you know, like it's not necessarily denying, I mean, I guess it is denial to a certain degree, but denial that's in, you know, truth to you, you know, to who you are and what your point of view is.
Well, and Jason has done such a good job of coaching us on those two types of things with the grounded scenes. He wants us to come out, not start talking right away, but to start doing some object work and notice what's going on there. And then when it's the characters, he'll often just say, no, what was your choice? That first choice, like, I'm cold. Well, then heighten that, or I want cake and you want,
yeah,
cake.
What does he say? He says, choose some, he has like a way, a very concise, he says, choose something, observe what you did, and then continue that and try to heighten it. I feel like it's something around those lines is what he says.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about, like, say you came in at the beginning of the scene and you made a pretty bold statement like, oh, I'm cold. And nobody really listened to that. And that was like, it was totally brushed over. Nobody yes-anded it. But you felt like that was a major point of view of your character. Would you hang on to that? Like, a lot of times, like, I'm like, oh, well, that's gone. Like, my idea is gone. How would you bring that back? And would you bring that back?
Yeah. If I were doing my best work, I would do it back, do it again and repeat it and be doing it in the background, shivering while you're doing something, you know, absolutely. Right. I think that would be very funny because the audience would notice I did it even if you literally use the other dent or your character dent. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question though, because it's a bit more challenging if somebody doesn't listen or acknowledge that point of view, then you are kind of left out in the cold.
But even if your scene partner doesn't yes and you, you still have a responsibility to yes and yourself. And I think,
I think it can still be funny. The hope is that your scene partner, you do it enough and you heighten it enough. They'll relent to like, oh, you're cold.
Right.
Or whatever. Like, do you need a coat? Right. Like,
yeah. Exactly.
Challenges. The first step, Jason says, first he says, do something and then notice what you did. What did you do anyway? And did you do like three things? Because you probably aren't going to keep track of all of them. So don't give too much at a time. Just one thing
simple is better. Yeah.
And it could be also just, I mean, we've played it too, where it's like, it could be a mannerism. It could be a way of walking. It could be, a way of talking. It could be a high voice or a low voice. And, mm-hmm. and what does, he's really good about asking us, like, if you talk like this, well, what kind of character are you? You kind of sound like John Wayne. So now that gives you something. You don't, like we're talking about trying to have ideas before you get on stage. That is such a simple thing. I mean, I remember hearing that advice and I was like, oh my God, that just like blew my mind and is going to make my improvising that much easier and better. By doing that little trick of just doing something with your voice, and that helps you, or mannerism, whatever. Now you know who you are as a character. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of lean into that, and then you're like, "Oh, okay, I'm this person."
So you guys have both studied clowning, so you have that character point of view. What brings it up to that absurdity level? How do you heighten
clowning?
Well, for clowning or just, I mean, clowning uses absurdity a lot, but in an improv sense, what takes it up to that next level of absurdity?
I mean, for me, I don't think of clowning as absurdity so much as failure, winning, losing, stakes. So for me, my current shortcut thought is that improv freed me from worrying about mistakes. And clowning made me embrace winning and losing and be like, they're all fun. They're so fun. And Chad really pulled that off in a workshop he did with us, where he would just arbitrarily say, oh, you lost. You're over in this team. You won. You're the hero now. Oh, wait. Oh, now you've done something ridiculous wrong. And you are now the worst of the worst. And you name all these different clusters of people that would be throughout the workshop space. You're now the leaders. You're the supreme leaders. You're in the gutter of shame.
Right. It's interesting how absurdity kind of takes maybe emotions that you might have about rejection and makes them okay, because I was rejected because my hair was bigger than yours, or I was rejected because I had a sandwich for lunch. It's stuff that doesn't, when it's stuff that doesn't matter, then I may, maybe it, I always try and turn it into something existential, but maybe it's not.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think, and I would say that there can be a degree of absurdity. It's kind of a nebulous word. I feel like people have maybe their own definition and experience with what absurdity is, and what absurd comedy is. But I think for me too, I think there is a bit of a connection between clowning and absurdity, because there's this freedom to do whatever, like anything kind of counts, and it's, ridiculous, and trying to put meaning on this ridiculousness, kind of like you're describing, Lisa, where, there's no real rules, you know, it's this silly construct of rules that is kind of absurd. But I was going to say too, like our last beat of sensitive people when we do the living room format is absurdity. And sometimes, or a lot of times, those can be the most fun scenes. They can also be, as players, sometimes we're like, what are we doing? You know, we kind of get in our heads and get judgy about it, I think. And then we're like, what the hell was that? But it can be also very, you know, because you can just go out there and do anything. And so you really don't have to have a plan and you don't have to say something smart. You know, you're just, I don't know.
Yeah, but I haven't really figured out what our absurd scenes are in Sensitive People yet. Absurd is the one I struggle with the most. But they're almost always very short. Yeah. They're almost always have multiple people on stage grunting and...
Yeah, it's always an interesting stage picture, I guess I would say. And it's and lots of times, I don't know, sometimes it can be really cool. And get sometimes the most laughs too. And I'm with you, Lisa. I'm still trying to figure it out. And but it's fun.
I think the word that stands out to me in this definition of absurdity that we read to you was it's ridiculous, but also unexpected. So sometimes it doesn't mean that it's like, oh, I'm a crazy person acting crazy. You know, sometimes it means it's just something that's unexpected for that situation. You know, like, you know, super fit person who's, who's been, you know, teaching the fitness class and giving all these fitness lessons to everybody, goes to lunch in the last scene with somebody and they're eating a giant cake while, the person who was laying on the couch all day is eating a salad, you know, like it's unexpected, you know, and that's what makes it funny or absurd or weird or, I don't know.
I think, we've talked about this with Sensitive People, like it wouldn't work if we started out with absurd scenes because it would be too much nonsensical stuff to start off and people would be like, what is this? But since we start with grounded and then we go to character and then it ends on absurd. Am I going in and out right now? I can tell my screen is being weird. Sorry. Sorry, people. But you know, we start with grounded character and then we end with absurd. So we've kind of gained the audience's trust so that at the very end, we can kind of get away with being a little more, you know, ridiculous and weird and avant-garde.
Right.
Anyways. Yeah.
Okay. So that wraps up our concept of the day. Do you want to jump into some history?
Sure. I mean, yeah, we were, I mean, it's not really history. I just kind of picked somebody that is, I guess I would say a prominent person in the improv world. There are many, obviously, but again, a biased pick because both Lisa and I have taken a workshop from this person. And it also, again, going back to, the idea of grounded. So I wanted to talk a little bit about David Rosowski. And so I'll just start by giving a little background on him. And then I'll just say a quote that he says about what he thinks makes great improv. So he was the former artistic director of Second City in Los Angeles. And he performed with people like Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Amy Sedaris, and Rachel Dratch. Those were his contemporaries. So he has his own unique style. And if you ever get people out there, if you ever get a chance to take a workshop from him, you know, you may not love what he does. You may love it. But it is, I think it's an amazing exercise to take one of his workshops. It will it will definitely, I don't know, to me, it really influenced my craft and made me think about improv in a different way. Does it mean I do the Rizowski method all the time? No. But it was very interesting and intense to go through. So this is what he says, and this is taken straight from his website about the type of style he does. I've developed a simple approach to improvising. Your present awareness is the only thing you need to create compelling, smart, truthful, and surprising scenes. We've talked about all of this already. Period. No games. Uh-oh. Controversy. No games. No preconceived premises, no ideas, no ego. All that matters is now. The actor's level of improvisation experience doesn't matter, for all you'll need to bring to my workshop is your present presence. All you'll leave with is your joy and excitement and confidence. And after all, what more do you need?
Love that.
Yeah. So discuss.
I feel like that is, I mean, I feel like it's very Zen, you know, kind of like live in the present moment. Everything is happening now, and now is the only time that exists.
Which is hilarious because if you've ever met Rizowski, he is one of the most intense people you'll ever meet. His philosophy is Zen, but he is very... Wouldn't you say, Lisa? He's intense.
Yeah. but he one of the things he does is you're all sitting around in chairs and he's talking about things. And then all of a sudden he'll say, everyone up but you two, just stay exactly how you are. And then he'll have you do a scene based on how you were sitting, you know, the space between you. And it's really cool to see that. What just your posture, your face, less your face, honestly, just like in clowning, your face doesn't matter as much. Of course it does, but, you know, it's all of you. And, were you looking towards each other, away from each other, et cetera. So just paying attention when they talk about you are enough, it's when you pay attention to everything about you. Are your feet pointing this way or that? Are you, is your chin down, up, you know, all of these things. So, I love what Rizowski said, and I get a lot out of that. And I think we could all benefit from him pointing out to us what we're missing about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And I think, and it's been a while now. So, and you know, there's a whole pandemic that happened. So I mean, in terms of, because he was really one of the first ever workshops after Mike Brown, who we love. But the really first intensive improv workshop I took. And so I was just like totally blown away afterwards. But I do remember too, he talked a lot about, you know, definitely that presence of mind and also being super aware of the building of the scene, you know, and this idea that I just remember the balloon, right? You talked about the balloon a lot, where it's like the balloon gets bigger and bigger and really noticing that happening in the scene until you're getting to a pop. So that idea of, I'm getting better at, but it, especially at that point, was not very good, where it's like, I would just want to come out with the thing, or, you know, I would start with too high. I would start up here. And then the scene had nowhere to go, you know, because there was not this buildup. So really, like, that's why I appreciate, like, with Jason, having us start off with ground, like with object work, just start off with something small for grounded scenes and let it do its thing. Instead of, you know, I always feel like I try to rush the scene, or oh God, nobody's talking. Like I got to fill it in, or, you know, I got to say something. And, that I've really appreciated kind of just really thinking about slowing it down.
He would have us do the sisters. Do you remember that? If I recall correctly, it was, you say your line, I say my line, you say your line, I say my line. It's the same line back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, until we see a kinesthetic change, you know, maybe he'd look at us intently to see, oh, you know, something changed in your body ever so slightly. We would not be aware of it probably, but sometimes the audience would. And then he'd say, there it is. Now chase it down wholly and fully or something like that. And like turn to your partner now. Before you could not move. You were just saying these words. And now tell him. And he'd be like, what is it that you're going to tell him? Because now it's come to that balloon you're talking about. It's going to pop because the tension has risen and tell them.
So what was really weird that just happened right now that you were just talking about the tension is like your mic or your audio just did this really weird thing, like almost like an explosion of audio that was, I just thought was funny because you were just talking about this metaphor of, or whatever.
It was like right on cue. I was like,
whoa. Rosowski, is that you? You invaded?
Are you there?
Rosowski.
Oh my goodness. Let's get a couple more questions in because we are running short on time and I do want to know a little bit more about a couple more forms that you have studied. I know that you've done duoprof
and
a little bit of stand-up.
Oh. Have you done duoprof?
All right, we're really getting to the dregs now. I think I did duoprof once, so really not much to say there. And I've done stand-up two times. Both in very gentle atmospheres, but stand-up was really interesting for me. I took a class with Katie, with her teacher, Kat Simmons.
And who we're going to have on in the next episode, by the way.
She'll be wonderful. Oh, good. Good, good.
There's like lots of plugs for different episodes.
we are surrounded by talent. It's great. And the thing I need to work on my writing skills, obviously, but the thing that really surprised me about stand-up was how much she said it's about breathing. I'd like to do it again. It was really fun to try that, but I'm kind of afraid to do it in real life in a non gentle environment. So,
but that was like a takeaway that you could maybe apply to other types of performances. I think that's so true. And we'll talk more about that with Kat, because she does talk a lot about, and to me, it kind of, in a lot of ways, it does align with Rosowski and that idea of presence of mind and Zen, like you mentioned, Jess, and just having that mindfulness and but being in your body, which sounds silly, but I mean, I know everybody who has performed on stage knows what that feels like when you're like, oh yeah, I'm ready to go. And you get on stage and then all of a sudden you're like, where did I go? Come back. Like you just, you know, you kind of just have that frozen moment and stop breathing or, you know, and so she talks a lot about like, before you even start, you know, just take your place on the stage, own that place, take a moment for yourself, breathe, and then begin, which sounds so easy, but yet it's hard sometimes, you know?
Well, and with clowning too, I think there's breath work that we should start learning. I know they say, just before you enter, take a breath and then like present yourself to the audience, let it out. And you're supposed to do that at a couple other times during the scene. And I would have to look it up to see when, but the audience can tell when you're breathing. And again, it's a kinesthetic response. People notice us so much more than we are aware that they notice us. When I'm on stage, I think I'm invisible, honestly. But they notice, even if I'm in the background and I do something, it is noticed.
Yeah, for sure. I also want to hear, because I know that you're a quick study. I mean, like I mentioned at the beginning, like you pick up as soon as you start something new or whatever, it's like you're like researching it, you know, you read up on it. So I'd really like to know, what are some of the books that have really impacted you with some of the things? Because I mean, Lisa, you've also done sketch. We took sketch from Jason Sarna as well. And we ended, it was a year long class and it culminated in a show that we got to write. We got to write our own scene, direct it, and it was an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. So there was sketch, and obviously we've talked about all the festivals you've been to, and obviously all the, you know, just your different experiences on teams and things with improv, short form, long form, teaching it, all this stuff. So clowning, obviously. So what are some books that you would recommend, or what has really helped?
Sure. I've actually done more podcasts than books, but...
Cool. Well, yeah, that's great too.
Yes, yours, of course. Also, I just listened today to Improv Town. BOC was on there talking about, not the deconstruction so much, but about position play, which is something I'd really like to get into.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
Position play, he teaches it with Miles Stroth, who I only know through BOC, but it, I'm having trouble seeing my notes. It's getting dark, but he says that 99% of all scenes are one of four types. It's either a straight observed type, which is more comedic than anything I think we do in Reno Improv. Maybe the folks that have the comedy background do this, but it's like some sort of a hit back off hit. Like you're at McDonald's and you're like, can you give me the dolphin sandwich? Sorry, sir, we don't have that. Okay. Can you give me the swordfish sandwich? No, we don't have that either. And then like the guy seems to accept it. And then you do a third beat of hitting it with something absurd. That's like, well, how about the bison sandwich or, you know, something like that. What he calls character driven, which is not the same as what we were talking about, but for him, it's always, what's also called peas in a pod, or people that are,
yeah,
in agreement. So you think of, two wild and crazy guys, or
right.
He uses the Key and Peele sketch where they're two valets and they're like in agreement with all these movies that they're researching. Then the fourth type is alternative reality, like vampires as cowboys or something like that. And then realistic scenes. So in the way he teaches this, he and this Miles Stroth, they figure out what kind of a scene it is, and then they know how to respond, what kind of responses are appropriate in that scene that you've set up. And I'd really like to, anyway, he had on Improv Town, he was talking about that today. It very much mirrored what he was talking about in Improv Utopia. I also did go on, I just look up people like Chad. When I got into clowning, I looked him up and listened to a ton of his podcasts, and everyone that he mentions, you know, so Natalie Kalkis, of course, and you know, you just start going down those kinds of pathways. But let's see, for books.
Didn't you get a clowning book?
I did. And I still haven't read it all, but a lot of it is exercises. Mm-hmm. So the book I would recommend the most is the one that Jason was using a lot for teaching sensitive people, which is Improvise, Seen from the Inside Out from Mick Napier.
That's a great one. I actually want to get that one.
You're welcome to borrow mine.
Maybe borrow yours. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Joe Diffenbacher did this clown, the physical.
Oh, cool.
Great stuff on YouTube. That's the other thing. I just, you know, you choose someone you like and you just start following them for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Cool. Jess, do you have other questions? That was mine.
Well, do you want to play a game?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Did we not? I guess we didn't officially do that.
We didn't officially play a game. Okay. So last week I went to the movie theater and there was this guy that took up three seats and he had a giant bag of popcorn in one hand and three ices in another. And then what happened? Lisa tells it best.
Well, he put the ices on the floor next to him, And of all things, he pulled a steak out of his briefcase and a steak knife and a fork. And he started cutting it and eating it right there in the theater. Well, Katie tells the next part best.
Yeah. And then a vegetarian walked into the theater because they were watching a vegetarian themed movie that night and called Veggies Gone Wild. And, you know, they saw this man eating a steak in the middle of the theater and they couldn't believe their eyes. So they whipped out a knife and said, "Let go of that steak, man." But what happened next, Jess tells really well.
Yeah, so they had the knives. Mm-hmm. All of them actually had individual knives. And they started actually cutting up the meat into tiny little pieces and spreading it among all of the vegetarians. And then the vegetarians started throwing it at him. But there were only so many pieces of this meat, right? So eventually he grabbed all of the meat and he threw it at the screen right as the part came on that was just so ironic. But, you know, Lisa tells this part best.
Right. It was right when the hero was about to kiss the heroine. It was the cucumber, if you remember, finally got the tomato, and the cucumber was bending over as best he could to kiss her. And then all these pieces of meat landed right on the cucumber, right as it was a close-up of her face. But Katie tells the next part best.
Yeah. And as right then the movie ended, and as the credits were rolling, you know, you could just see sort of the bloody part, you know, left over of the meat just sliding down the screen, to which everybody happened to have a glass of wine, and they lifted their glasses of wine and they said, "Cheers to that." The end.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. That was good. I like that story. It's always fun to tell stories. I like to do that with my family.
I think improv with kids is so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jess has great ideas. She comes up with games to get her kids to do stuff, or if they, you know, if they're crying, to switch them out of that mode. Like she uses improv for parenting quite well, I would say, right, Jess?
I do. I mean, it's a big thing. It bonds the kids to me because they know that improv is my interest and something that I love. And I think that it's like, it really makes them happy to be included in my interests. And it's something that they can do and I can do, and we can kind of do as a family, just to be silly and enjoy each other. So yeah, kids.
Well, I have my ex's child, Xander, he's at the superhero age. And when I visit him, he will endlessly say, "Who's another villain?" He always wants to know about the villains. And I don't know villains. So we've turned that into an improv game, and I'll come up with imaginary villain names. And he'll say, "And what's his strength?" And I'll come up with his strength. And then he'll say, "But is that a real one?" Like the, you know, like all the.
Oh.
But is that a real one?
That's a cute adorable game. That's a good one. You play that with your kids, Jess.
Yeah. So Lisa, if people are looking you up, where do they find you on the internet? Or do they?
Want people to find you on the internet?
I do not. But Reno Improv, come join us at Reno Improv and have fun with us.
Yeah, come see Sensitive People at Reno Improv and the clown group that shall be named soon.
We will put those in the show notes. We do have Reno Improv in the show notes already. in most of our shows, and we'll put stuff for sensitive people. Please go out and support them. It's such an such amazing shows.
If you're in Reno, obviously.
If you're in Reno. if you're not in Reno.
Quite yet a traveling improv group, but maybe one day.
Maybe you ought to be. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Lisa. It was so fun.
Any final thoughts?
No, just thank you for having me. This is a great podcast you do. Thank you.
Yay.
And see.